The founders forgot that we had medical liberty.
We seem to be losing by taking the side of the middle. And we seem to constantly be losing.
I think Trump has made some kind of arrangements with Russia.
This person has made the allegations that they were a man.
If there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There's no second best crypto asset.
Let's talk about science.
I respect you and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, JF, because in a time when everybody was attacking me, when Sargon doxed me and smeared me, you were the only one who gave me a platform, and you were very kind in helping me put the truth out there.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Jeff G Tonight, the India-Pakistan conflict, Shades of Poo, is the alternate title for tonight. What happens when brown people want to kill other brown people? Do you care? How are you doing, people of the regular chat? People are talking about my food post on X. Let me tell you, I have more. I have more controversy generated by my food post than I expected. You know, I thought that the food post would be kind of just welcomed and a kind of respite from my other provocative work, but no, people interpret everything provocative about my post. They don't like the beans. Some people are anti-beans. Yeah. So whatever. I mean, I will continue posting my food post. But I didn't expect that it would be such a headache. Carney was talking with Trump. And Carney said to Trump, Canada is not for sale. So he asked that Trump stops referring to Canada as the 51st state, and he did it in language that a real estate person can understand.
As you know from real estate, there are some places that are never for sale.
That's true.
We're sitting in one right now, you know, Buckingham Palace that you visited as well.
That's true. And
having met with the owners of Canada over the course of the campaign, last several months, it's not for sale, won't be for sale ever. But
so yeah, I mean, it's not a not particularly important, since no one was taking the offer of Trump seriously. And this is what I don't like about current politics. It's all bullshitting. It's all a space of fiction. We talk of the 51st state, but it's not happening. There's not even a plan. And now you have Carney playing into that plan by saying it won't happen. Okay, but what is the end goal of all this? I have no clue. Gamergate wins. Leftist video game journalists face buyouts and mass layoffs. An article at Zero Edge. Beyond those conservatives and libertarians in the alternative media that were warning about the invasion of woke ideology for many years, the very first group of normies to recognize the progressive threat to their subculture was gamers. It is true. It is an interesting historical understanding of Gamergate as maybe kind of the first event that is an event of resistance against wokeism. There was some YouTubing that was anti-SJW before Gamergate, but Gamergate was this kind of big event that involved those anti-SJW YouTubers like Sargon of Akkad, and it did build into a very confrontational event, and yes, a protection of a specific subculture of the internet, the gamers. Coronel Mass Ejection says Canada needs to get out of the Commonwealth. Sure. But, I mean, I don't know. I prefer a breaking up of Canada. You know, Canada being being a liberal country forever is not a very pleasant thought. So I think that breaking up Canada to me is much more important than breaking away from the Commonwealth. John Drake says, yeah, best to get out of the Commonwealth. All it's brought us is droves of Indian immigrants. Yeah, and as I was reviewing the history of the colonial history of India, I realized that was not part of my understanding before. Today, I realized that the invasion of Canada by Indians makes sense in the greater context of this alliance and backlash of empire between the colonization of India by the British. And you can fully understand that there was a gradual alliance, and part of this alliance, in a way, you can understand it as, oh yeah, we're going to allow you to immigrate to our places, which is why today England is filled with Indians and Canada is filled with Indians. I hadn't figured that out yet. It hadn't struck me as what was happening, but I think it is. I think we can understand some sort of alliance between the English powers and India. And in fact, down the line, we may very well understand not so much the British colonization of India, but the reverse, which is that India used the backlash against empires to eventually show that they could not be dominated and conquered. Not only that, but they could do the reverse to the empire. They could colonize Canada. They could colonize the Commonwealth. And eventually, you may have to understand Canada as an outpost of India. Maybe that's where we're headed. I mean, again, Shades of Pooh will be a paler one. Blimpy Supervisor says, when a conquering party is too sentimental, all of what they conquer becomes slime, and when they return home, they have slime on their boots. Exactly. This is what I retained from our colonial history. It's just not worth it. France is in trouble with sub-Saharan Africans and North Africans because it got too involved in Africa. England is stuck with Indians, and Canada is stuck with Indians because it got too involved in Indian domination. But you pay a huge price for these attempts at control, which is why I said before, and I will say it again, the only real way to win a war is to exterminate the other side. There is no such thing as a war of conquest and you let the people exist. No such thing. You lose every time in the end if you let the people exist. Now, it may sound cruel, but at least it's realistic. And in fact, I would appeal with this philosophy, I would appeal to not engage in war. It's actually a pacifist philosophy. To realize that everything you've seen in terms of war forever is half measures. It's not complete war. There's no such thing as a complete war until you eliminate the entirety of the people you're at war with. Blimpy Supervisor says you're simply enabling them to rearm with greater list of grievances. Exactly. Sneed for Life says, in the words of Emily Ukiss, nuke Africa. Now I can say it because I'm not on YouTube, we're on Rumble, and so we can quote her properly. Still, I don't see why you would nuke Africa. Africa may be the least dangerous and containable, country or place that you can think of. I am worried about almost everything except Africa. Now, Africa is a danger if you have porous borders. Now, Africa becomes a problem then. Coup pause. The Supreme Court stays a radical decision by lower court to hijack Trump military policy rejecting transgender extremism. Trump had decided that the trans cannot be part of the army. And You know, the whole movement for the inclusion of the trans had been a movement to basically make more Democrat the bureaucracy of America. That's they wanted to attract black women, LGBT people, so that because these people, you're sure that they're Democrats. You're sure that they are not going to vote Republican. So that was a trick that the Democrats have used by being more inclusive. They were increasing in those ranks. They were decreasing the representation of the white male, and they were increasing all leftist dysfunctional thoughts. But Trump has decided to ban them. And now, despite that a judge attempted to stop this Trump ban, the Supreme Court has decided that no, it's fine. You can be a military in chief, a chief of the military, and decide that people with gender dysphoria, simply they suffer from a psychiatric disorder, they are not fit for combat. Now, it's too bad because it leaves them making more trouble inside the nation. You know, maybe some of them, I would have liked to see them on the front line. Maybe a sweet spot on the Ukraine front line. Sneed for Life says, are you going to impregnate Shiloh Hendricks with your Gary P. seed? I have thought about it. I have reflected on the subject. I have considered all avenues. I have imagined myself inseminating her. But I have come to the conclusion that the Gary P. seed is an exclusive property of my girlfriend. And so because I have an ideological commitment toward monogamy, I cannot impregnate Shiloh Hendricks. And anyways, she has her boyfriend and she's happy with him. So that is not a case where I could increase the number of white babies. If Shiloh Hendricks is still fertile, she is getting inseminated. My efforts are better invested with my own girlfriend. James Lindsay says, based is a bad word because it's based on cocaine use. We'll do a quick review of some aspects of this interview before we talk about India and Pakistan, because it was fucking clownish. I mean, and these guys, I don't know how we could call them the Zionist connection, I guess, because that's what they do. They're basically funded by Israel in some form. But these guys are pathetic.
But there's nothing about a guy in fetish gear at a parade in front of children, for example, that's challenging the norms of a repressive sexual society that thinks that, you know, it should be procreative, heterosexual sex only. That's an excuse. It's pretext. What they're after is the norms that hold regular society together. Yep.
So Harry's got something. He's talking exclusively about the left here. He's saying, you know, the guy who pushes for some weird sexual fetish is pushing against normality. But what is normality in the domain of sex? It's heterosexual reproduction. So yes, that is true. The left is against heterosexual reproduction. They hate it.
And my argument is that the woke right does the same thing. They have a cult.
Now, this is where it slides into the woke right.
Cult of transgression, too. They sometimes call it being based, but that's a completely bad word for what they're trying to describe, because based should mean based in reality, although the origin of the term is slang for being free-based on cocaine. So
I had never heard this. I have been one of the first users of the term based forever. And it, to me, it always meant grounded. Grounded in solid moral values. Yes, with an axis and desire for truth. But more than truth. You know, committed to the truth. Grounded in reality. And grounded in a set of moral priors that were solid. That were based. That were like a base. A base is something that's solid and sedentary. So that's always what it was based. It's been abused in all sorts of ways. And I guess the late stage of memes is when James Lindsay begins to reinterpret them. You can see memes going to die, you know? And at this point, to make a link to cocaine use, I had never heard of this parallel. That is not how it's been used in our communities. Frog Eyes says, I've noticed how terms like based have escaped into wider world of normie culture, and now regular NPCs use that term. Absolutely. I found a normie doctor, you know, where I was just mentioning some of my preferences with respect to certain medical practices, and he was like, oh, based. A normie doctor just out of the university. And based, when it started, it basically exclusively meant / our guy. It meant an anti-Semite, basically. There was no... You couldn't be based because you eat meat, okay? You couldn't be based because you farm your own eggs. You were based because you were a radical anti-Semite at first. That is what it was. Then it got expanded, and the left also used it in a kind of sarcastic way. Oh, based. Okay, you are a female with a dick, based. And bro, that is it's it's shaking me at my core just to imitate the left doing it. But yeah, the cocaine reference, never heard of this. I don't think it was ever the intended meaning. But let's get through a couple of points of this interview, because here you have a perfect example of why a lack of definition in this whole sphere of Jordan Peterson symbolism, you end up saying absolutely nothing with this crap. Because if you don't work with, hey, let's keep something that keeps us based in truth. Let's keep some empiricism. Let's keep some, I need to quote the people I'm talking about. They abandon all chains in this interview because they refuse to even quote the people that they're talking about. So it's like, okay, well, it could be me, could be not me. They can connect all sorts of things that they've observed in various anonymous accounts, put them into a bubble of pathology and bring in pathological terms to it. And it's like, it's undiagnosable because you're not even talking about a person. Because you say it from the very start of this interview, we will not name the people that we're talking about. Well, you know, part of the mechanism that keeps a researcher and a thinker connected to reality is the obligation to name and quote people. And that, I take it very seriously. It's very rare that you'll hear me comment on a general phenomenon without getting to what happened in that video, what was the word said, what was the sentence said, who said it, what was the context. If you leave this world and you start saying, I'm going to start being critical about a non-entity, let's call them the dark triad psychopaths of the internet, then anything goes. You're going to be able to say anything about this fictitious person you've invented, but you're going to be saying nothing about reality. This is what we find ourselves for an hour and a half with James Lindsay, a fucking retard.
Very, I think, one of the most important essays in English, which is Joseph Pieper's Abuse of Language, Abuse of Power. I don't know if you've heard of this.
No.
So they're trying to define the woke right here and generalize the concept of woke. And they're talking about abuse of power.
Pieper was a Catholic and he had some... He wrote this... I don't know what else he did, honestly. I should probably look into it. But he wrote this essay, Abuse of Language, Abuse of Power, and talked about how tyrants arrange an abused version of the prevailing language to mislead people.
So what makes me, for example, what makes me a tyrant? Because I would fall under the qualification of the woke right, according to James Lindsay. what makes me a tyrant? I'm a libertarian. I favor the right of white people to live sovereignly among themselves and to decide for themselves and to not have things imposed by other people. How is that tyrannical? And how am I playing with words? Because these guys are playing with words throughout this whole interview. Woke right. Oh, we're going to take a woke left, but we're going to do the same energy, but for the right. Woke right. That's plays of word. That's ways in which you manipulate language to falsely attribute the attribute of tyrannical to your opponents.
Into the tyrannical program. And it's in two sections, two parts. It's been 5 years since I've read it, so forgive the details. But there's, in a sense, two chapters to this long essay. And one of the two is very Catholic in its orientation, and one of them is this more general thesis. And it was extremely interesting. But of course, in political punterology, you also have the discussion of the importance of language, which of course we were seeing with the social justice woke movement as well, that they're misusing words like racism very blatantly. And so in political punterology, you have this claim he makes that he says, well, with the psychopath, what he calls a pathocracy, mm-hmm. what you have is you have people who are psychologically disordered, who create a vision of the world. They need other people to play in it. And the way that they do this is by creating, he calls it a second language. So it's the same language.
So his point he's trying to do is that both the woke right and the woke left are creating a social ladder with a special value to it that you only can escalate. Like, okay, my new moral ladder is race. And now if you don't talk about race, I'm the expert on race. You are not. And so I'm above you. Look. Alternative views in a competitive environment will always be on alternative ladders. So it's like, yeah, any philosophy is trying to escalate higher than the other philosophies and trying to prove itself to be better. That is not questionable. It also applies to normie centrist philosophy, by the way, James Lindsay. So the idea of having a comparative alternative axis on which to be better is not a feature that is exclusive to the woke right or the woke left, even in your conception of those terms. It is a feature of alternative systems in competition. Companies have it. A company is better than another company. It will outcompete it. Ideas have it. Philosophies have it. Moral systems have it. Empiricism as it. There are certain theories that are better at explaining the world than others. And if you become an expert of that theory, which is the best, you outcompete the other experts. So yes, what you are perceiving in a bunch of people trying to create an alternate scale is actually your competition. It's your competition in the world of beliefs. It is those people on the internet that have accepted that race had something to do with reality, that Jews had something to do with American politics, and that these two pieces of information were more informative than ignoring it. This is what you're experiencing as a bunch of people trying to create an alternate pyramid of values. A rusty trombone, a sexual position. Why are you sending me Richard John? Next time you send me a sex position Wikipedia link, I'm banning you forever, Richard Jones. I am abolishing tyrannically your right of speech on this channel forever. I don't give a shit about your sexual position, even if it's an heterosexual position. Fuck your links. They have nothing to do with what I'm talking about. The Jack Acid says, Jeff, are you going to cover the Met Gala fashions? Probably not. I don't know. Probably not.
Bottom. That was an intolerable experience. By the way, this is all the story of Lucifer.
Yes.
We've been cast
yes,
to the bottom.
Yes.
And so what we're...
Oh, yeah. So here we have the Lucifer part, which is... Oh, boy, quite something.
we were used to be the masters of the game, but now we've been dispossessed from the game. They threw us from top to bottom. That was an intolerable experience. By the way, this is all the story of Lucifer.
Yes.
We've been cast
to
the bottom.
Yes.
And so what we're going to do now is we're going to grab our rightful inheritance and we're going to build the structure that returns us to it. P.S., the organizational structure is the Führer Prinzip, so I'm at the top.
Okay, so I want to talk about this Lucifer idea. So Lucifer is the morning star and he's the angel of the untrammeled intellect. That's how he's portrayed in Milton, right? And he's allied in some strange way with the serpent in the Garden of Eden.
If I might just interject, if he's the morning star, what do you do in the morning after the morning star rises? You wake up.
Right.
Woke.
Right.
I mean, who consumes this thing? Who comes home to their wife saying, I've heard James Lindsay share a brilliant analysis of Lucifer. Have you ever noticed that Lucifer wakes up in the morning and that waking up is like the woke are woken up to a reality? I had never thought of this parallel. No one does this. What the fuck does that even mean? This is the symbolism of Jordan Peterson done by a retard. This is what happens when you lose yourself in symbolism. So woke, by the way, left or right, means awaken to a perceived reality. In fact, I believe that the emergence of the woke meme actually is rooted in Jean-Claude Van Damme's statement. Jean-Claude Van Damme was on cocaine in one interview, and he was like, that's because you're not awake. See, I'm awake. I'm awake. I see things. And I believe that it is pretty much where the woke term, although he didn't, I don't know if he uses woke or if he uses awake, but I believe it's where it ultimately stems. It is that when you are part of a political movement that is interested in one particular thing, whether it's the left or the right, you end up seeing truths that are very important. And you realize that there are people who are not woke, who are not willing to see these truths. And evidently, they are being self-deceptive about it, both the left and the right. I mean, I can understand a leftist seeing the centrist, you know, Martin Luther King Jr. type centrist, these new Republicans, you could call them, or these old liberals. I can understand a leftist look at them and say, look, when you say that we should not judge people on skin color, you are refusing to see a reality that I can see. The leftists are right about this. The leftists are right. Now, in their view of the world, the reality that you're not awakened to is the fact that black people are disadvantaged in society because they're black. And because they're black, they have things shuttered away from them that makes them unable to progress in society at the same level, rate, or capacity that white people can. And that's because of racism. Now, chop off this part. Forget about the leftist priors about black disadvantage and think of it as a right-wing prior, which is, okay, there is a black disadvantage, but it's not racism. It's actually race. It's their genes. But we agree, leftists and right-wingers, that race matters. And when we see the middle, by which standard is our belief less correct than that of the middle who wants to ignore it? But it's by the standards of empiricism. And we see you, James, whenever confronted with empiricism, like you blocked me on X, when I challenged you on a question that was super simple, I was not even being aggressive toward him. I just say, hey, have you considered this fact? and he blocked me. We see that you're not willing to engage with the truth on this question. If you wanted to prove the woke wrong, you would do so by a standard of factual, empirical demonstration. You would say, okay, you're wrong because this. You're wrong because I've measured the number of black people, their talent, and you're wrong. You would either say you're wrong to the left, you're wrong to the right, or you're both wrong. And you could prove that with facts, but we can see that you're not willing to do that. That the only way you will engage with the question of race is by denying it and hiding from it. And for that reason, it is fair to say that you are not awakened to a reality, that you have decided that there was a subset of facts that you were just not going to engage on. Later in the interview, they talk about degeneracy.
Right, and we can see that's like just happening everywhere right yep. now. OnlyFans is the greatest example of that.
Right.
That woman in Great Britain who's sleeping with like 100 men a night, or I think she managed 1,000 in a week, something like that. I won't say her name, but she's become very well known for the absolute outrageousness of her behavior. Her mother is her business manager. It's so awful that you just can't believe it. Okay, so you have this mother of all prostitutes. So that's the.
I don't know. Is the world better with Bonnie Blue or without Bonnie Blue? I haven't fully decided whether I share the moral indignation of Jordan Peterson, because without Bonnie Blue having sex with these 1,000 men, these 1,000 men are incels. If they're down to paying on an OnlyFans to be in a queue of 1,000 men to have sex with a woman, so it's either that they have sex with Bonnie Blue or they have zero sex. In that context, I don't know, you know, if Bonnie Blue consents, she wants to be the prostitutes of the people, she wants to be freely giving away sex, maybe we should let her. Maybe we should say, all right, we sacrifice one woman out of 1,000 in our society, and we do it because that one woman can generate so much happiness that it's just worth it.
Central spirit of commoditized female sexuality. That's going to happen when the state deteriorates. Of course, female sexuality is going to commoditize when the state loses its protective and integrative function.
This is a point I found interesting because it reveals something about the thinking of Jordan Peterson. In Jordan Peterson's view, the state's role is to support the female. He didn't talk about when the male patriarchy disintegrates, females find themselves needing help. It's when the state disintegrates, females find themselves basically prostitutes. They become the whore of Babylon, as he says in the interview. Very interesting, because precisely it is the fact that the state is there to provide a safety net to women that is destroying the family. And although he just flirts with the idea here, so I would like Jordan to go deeper into this question. Does he believe that it is the natural role of the state to support women? Because it's not been the traditional role at all. In fact, whenever the state did that, it destroyed the family, and it was a very recent innovation. This whole, you can leave your husband and survive in the wild because you're going to get social welfare payment. I would like Jordan to have explored this question more in depth, but it's all he said about it in the interview.
And the excuse was, if
well,
you
Well, degenerate's
don't...
the right word, too, I think, because I think one of the hallmarks, because if you are a relativist, you might say, well, who are you to place modes of orienting yourself in the world in a hierarchy?
Yeah, right? Sure.
Because you described some of them as degenerate. The reason that they're degenerate is because when they're employed, they degenerate.
Yeah, sure, of
right?
course.
So that's so they're but, games that they're games that violate their own principles as they play themselves out.
But there's nothing about a guy in fetish gear at a parade in front of children, for example, that's challenging the norms of a repressive sexual society that thinks that, you know, it should be procreative, heterosexual sex only. that's an excuse. It's pretext. What they're after is the norms that hold regular society together. Yep. And my argument is that the woke right does the same thing. They have a culture.
Well, yeah, but these norms are the very heterosexual norm that you were talking about. So I don't know that there's a meaningful division that is established here.
Of transgression too. They sometimes call it being based, but that's a completely bad word for what they're trying to describe, because based should mean based in reality, although the origin of the term is slang for being free-based on cocaine. So they're out of their minds, right? It's just funny how this lines up.
Completely delusional reference to cocaine here.
But what do they do? Okay, so the left has told us, the far left has told us, you can't be racist. Racist is worse. Everybody's a racist. And of course, they completely made degenerate the concept of racism, the word racism, the accusation, the sky is racist, going for a hike is racist. But they aren't trying to reclaim and say, okay, no, wait, racism's bad. We don't want to be racist, and nobody should be racist, and the left completely ruined it. So we
No, but see, that's your desire as a centrist, as a defender of the status quo. You want the leftists to come home reasonably with your centrism, and you want them to stop seeing racism where you've refused to see it.
We need to reclaim the term and have this healthy societal norm about discrimination and...
Now, this is so important because they've spent... I didn't show all of it, but they spent like 20 minutes pathologizing right-wing thinking. Oh, it's the dark triad. He drops the word dark triad. He just drops the word in an interview where it's not even part of a sentence. He's like, yeah, and then, you know, dark triad, cluster B, you know. Oh, and cluster C also, and cluster A also, it's larger. And yet he defines a status quo view of the world in which he ignores the facts of race. He declares that this is healthy behavior. He used the term here, healthy. So when you redefine the center as healthy and the extremes as dark triad cluster B disorder, what do you think you get? You have an assumption that you are right and that we are wrong. So you have no basis to arbitrate what is the thing that you call healthy. What is it? Is it correct? Is it empirically correct? Is it true? No. You abandon all of this and you have declared yourself the winner by deciding these people are unhealthy, I am healthy. So it's all that this interview has, really. It's a change toward a psychiatric view of politics, but with no justification for why your view is the healthy one. By the way, the person who gets a knife in their heart because they were not racist enough, they're not very healthy. They're not very healthy right now. Their body is getting eaten by bacteria. By which standard is that healthy behavior? By which standard is the idea, I'm not going to care whether there's black people in my neighborhood because I want to judge each of them according to their own individual merit. And I'm going to get shot within a week in that neighborhood. How is that healthy? How is ending up dead the healthy behavior by James Lindsay? I mean, it is as ridiculous as this. It's the question that we must ask James Lindsay. But we can't, because James Lindsay is isolating himself into his X tower, blocking people like me, and not engaging with the points. So continue doing your symbolism analysis. It's all bullshit. None of this will survive the test of time. And in the end, it's going to matter. The things that you're trying to hide about race. So Shades of Pooh, ladies and gentlemen, our special subject tonight. What happens when brown people shoot other brown people? First visual Indian missile strike in Pakistan targets Bahawalpur Mosque, linked to Mohammed founder Maulana Masood Azhar. So here we see a visual of the strike of India onto Pakistan. Yeah, so that was not a very telling visual. This one is a little better. Let's see. Why are these people always on these bicycles? They're always paired too. Can you imagine your dick is just frotting against another brown person's back for the whole way? I don't like this bicycle lifestyle. Anyways, so why is India striking Pakistan? Well, first, Trump didn't like it. Trump calls India's strike on Pakistan a shame. Trump appeared surprised. He said, "I just hope it ends very quickly." So Trump has been trying to create this kind of new era of peace everywhere. He's been trying to whack-a-mole and tell Israel, go fast with Gaza, but finish it. And he's been trying to get peace in Ukraine because he would like to have the benefits of an era of peace and economic growth for the people of the earth. But if something like India-Pakistan pops out while he's trying to master the other conflicts, he's not going to like it. So India has launched airstrikes on Pakistan and Pakistan-administered Kashmir. Basically, it all started with a bomb attack that killed about 40 people. The bomb attack happened in western India and targeted a paramilitary vehicle. And India believes that Pakistan was at the source of this bomb attack. And so the current strikes that we see are the response to this car bomb attack. The location of the strikes is Kotli, Ahmadpur East, Bagh, Muridkeh. Okay, so Wednesday's attacks are the first time since 2019 that India has conducted strikes. Indian jets targeted multiple locations after it blamed Islamabad for a suicide car bomb attack. Blimpy supervisor says, with all due respect, a war between India and Pakistan would be one of the few where I'm totally neutral. An entertained bystander. Yeah, I don't particularly care, but I think it's important to understand, just from a historical perspective, what has happened. So that was the article on the initial... So that was the article in 2019 about the car bomb attack. India says Pakistan had direct hand in deadly convoy strike. So this car bomb attack that killed 40 in 2019 was the last time we had India strike Pakistan. Now, when you look at the map, this is the situation for India. You have India right here. And Kashmir is the region under conflict. It dates back to a conflict that emerged from the British colonies withdrawing from India and letting India self-determine. And there was a conflict then about what do we do with the Muslim population. So there were Muslim principalities, and they detached from India then and chose to go their own way into what became Pakistan. And into what was called East Pakistan, which is now called Bangladesh. So originally, at the outset of World War II, the British gave power to self-determination, and you had certain principalities that decided to join Pakistan, and those were mainly Muslim populations. And then you had a share of the Muslims, one-third of the Muslims of the whole Indian Empire then, decided to stay within what became India, what became a majority Hindu nation. So at this point in time, India is 84%, something like this, 80% Hindu and 14% Muslim. And you had the Kashmir, which was this region here, which both sides were extremely worried about the possibility of the other side controlling it. So for India, it's an access to deeper into the continent and toward Afghanistan and having a surface with China. And so there are multiple conflicts related to Kashmir, where here you have a part that is administered by China, but claimed by India. Same thing for this little circle here. You have the fact that, well, the initial conflict between Pakistan and India is as to whether that this is under Muslim control. And so right now you have this upper part here that is currently controlled by Pakistan, by the Muslims. And most of the conflicts that we see arise in the last few days have arisen along this front line here, because that is another part of Kashmir that is called the Indian-administered Kashmir. In other words, the part of Kashmir that the Indians have successfully kept on their side. I want to show you what India looked like. That is the political divisions of India in 1909. So notice that it was bigger than the current India. It included Kashmir, Punjab. It included what has become Pakistan. It included what eventually became Bangladesh. And so it was an extensive empire, and the English were having problems controlling the populations there. At first trying to impose some sort of English rule, but eventually finding that there were things that the Indians could never be changed about, like bridal, you know, young brides. They first tried changing this between 1859, which was the period of domination of the English, 1858 to the 1940s. There were various attempts and eventually abandonment at changing the local culture. And there were also strategic plays being pushed for managing the local populations and their various conflicts. And one of this was to let the principalities choose if they were joining Pakistan or India. And it created a split situation where India was at the center and decided to be a Hindu nation. And then you had Pakistan who decided to split, and then Eastern Pakistan here, which became Bangladesh. They split that and they were part of the same country. It was called Pakistan and it included two very separate patches of territory. There was then a series of wars in the 20th century. The wars were generally to establish whether the Kashmir would end up controlled by India or controlled by Pakistan. And one of the wars was also the war that led to the independence of Bangladesh from Pakistan. So eventually Pakistan was unable to defend their eastern part, their eastern patch. And that led to a situation where Bangladesh formed as a country. And therefore Pakistan lost. Most of these wars in the 20th century, Pakistan has been dominated by India because India is just bigger, more technological society with some degree of collaboration with English powers. And so they have always been dominating Pakistan and winning. That's why there's a part of Kashmir that is under their administration at this point. However, parallel to this, there's also been the development of nuclear bombs by both sides. So in 1974, you had a first nuclear trial that was made by India. They detonated one bomb. this and the fact that they had led to the liberation of Bangladesh revealed to Pakistan that Pakistan had to do something to defend themselves or they would eventually not exist. They just saw their eastern patch taken from them. And so Pakistan decided, we have an India that's building nuclear even without the permission of the greater powers of the US. They're doing so on their own. We have to do it too. And so Pakistan became the first Muslim nation to launch into a serious engineering program seeking to develop a bomb. And it's by 1998, both sides had succeeded at developing nuclear detonation. And India made a series of five tests in 1998. Blowing up five nuclear bombs in a row. And Pakistan, in response, a few days after, was able to make these detonations also, six detonations in their case. Now, note that we have here, therefore, two nuclear powers that are in conflict. But the conflict is still very local for now. It's still this local conflict around Kashmir. So I don't know that it's an existential conflict for either side to the point where they would use their nuclear bomb. India has a policy of not using the nuclear bomb as a first strike. Pakistan doesn't have such policy. They have the policy that they would use their nuclear bomb if there is an invasion that their forces cannot push back. So then it becomes a question of when could that explode into a nuclear conflict? Well, if India becomes clearly colonial and pushes into Pakistan with the idea of making gains. I don't know that we're there. I don't know that we're there at all. Vlad the Empire says, why did this all start right after J.D. Vance's visit? The U.S. needs instability in the world to sell their debt. It's a good question. It's very easy to think that somehow the fact that J.D. Vance is married to an Indian has to play in all of this in some way. But I don't know. I have no clue. Did it just give... You know, when you are allied with the strongest power, it gives you a kind of nationalistic pride and a feeling of confidence that you can go and perhaps... Perhaps that's why India, or perhaps India has been looking at what Israel is doing with Gaza and saying, hey, it's our time. It's the time where we have to settle everything because Trump is going to eventually expect peace. And so if we have to strike, we should do it now. Now, I would note that these two powers have not demonstrated very advanced nuclear weapons. They have developed these nuclear weapons, in a very traditional fashion and perhaps without the best engineering progress. And so Pakistan, the highest detonation that they have done is 40 kilotons. So that is about twice the strength as the Hiroshima bomb. Now, it's still a considerable explosion that can destroy a city, but we're not talking about the most advanced thermonuclear weapons that eventually have a stage of fusion. We're talking about just basic boosted fission nuclear devices. Still dangerous in the sense that you can eliminate a lot of people with it. So we'll see. We'll see if those get used. Up to now, nuclear weapons have been mostly a deterrent, and they have effectively worked. So basically, when the country you're attacking has nuclear weapons, you may be in a situation where you don't want to make territorial gains, where you don't want to put them in a desperate mode. And so I would suspect that what we have seen is built up for border, very localized conflict, but that this will not build into a World War III scenario or anything that's grave. Blimpy Supervisor says they probably don't fly well. The Indians have an elephant statue on their ballistic missile, which makes it veer off to the left. Both countries don't seem particularly developing particularly advanced things, let me tell you. Now, of course, I would suspect that India has kind of the edge technologically, but Pakistan, being a Muslim nation, the only Muslim nation that has had enough of an engineering drive to even get to the first stage fission bombs, we're not even talking about the level that bombs attained in the 60s or 70s for the US. So Pakistan, in nuclear terms, is where the US was around 1940, 1945. So that's where they are. So even if there was a nuclear exchange between these two countries, I wouldn't expect it to be like civilizational end for the whole of humanity. It would still be just a bunch of brown people loosely targeting each other and perhaps even missing some targets. Wattheads says Samson option. Yeah, well, the Pakistani Samson option is a little less technological. Sneed for Life says India has a far-right anti-Islam government. Well, yeah, because in their context, you've just seen their history. Their whole partitioning has been because of Islam. So why is Pakistan a country today? It's because there was a bunch of principalities of the Indian Empire that didn't want to join the majority Hindu. Why is there a Bangladesh? Well, it's because there was a East Pakistan that eventually got agitated by nationalistic movements to be detached from Pakistan, but that is still under Muslim control. Frog Eyes says Indian intelligence probably already scammed the missile abort codes from Pakistani bombers helming the nuclear arsenal. There is some degree of infiltration in the history of both countries. You know, Pakistan infiltrating the Indian side, I think, in the 70s to make advances in Kashmir. You have some accusations that the Indian secret services are doing some degree of infiltration or what is it, sabotage on the side of Pakistan. I mean, it's a shit show of a place, and I don't really care what happens with it, really. I really don't give a shit. Blimpy Supervisor says, lucky for Bali, it's an island. If it was connected to Java, it would have been all Muslim. Oh, I don't know where these islands are, but okay. Thanks for sharing your impressions. Vlad the Empire says, have you seen their military parades with crazy balancing over motorbikes, stunts, and so on? Oh, what side is that? Because I think I've seen. But I think the ones I've seen, wasn't it Myanmar that was doing this? Do they do this also in Pakistan? Yeah, there's this whole ninja culture of like ninja equilibrium with a motorbike on my head and a spinning dancer on the motorbike. Yes, it is absolutely bizarre. That is it for tonight, boys. Unconventional wisdom says India is disgusting and some country needs to do something about it. Lol. A cleanup, maybe. Maybe we can expect a cleanup of the streets. Frog Eyes says, I'm more concerned about the spilling over into a conflict between Indians and Pakistani on the streets of Canada. Yeah, actually, that is more relevant than this conflict. And I've been wondering, where would Chinese power lie? Where would Russia lie in all of this? Seems that historically, Russia has been siding with Pakistan at times, but loosely, and at times being disagreeing with the progress with where Pakistan was headed. So it seems that there's not even a clear interest of outside powers, although I'm sure it would all trickle down if shit was to go down. I'm sure that the bigger powers would align, especially with J.D. Vance, you know, with his in-bed secret agent of India, making sure that he is biased for this side. I'm sure India would align with the Europeans and the Americans. Frog Eyes says, Field Commander J.F. Singh will not hesitate to press the big red button. What do you mean, this button? Oh yeah, people also at the beginning were saying, you fucking fucker! You fucking motherfucker! Fucking fuck! Fuck you, fucker, bloody motherfucker!